Good morning, everyone. Remote hearings are held in accordance with House Rule 10.01. This rule has been posted online and is linked to our public meeting notice on the House website. All remote hearings will be recorded and live streamed by House Public Information Services. Members have the contents of their virtual packet available to them, and for the public, these materials have been posted online. Members, if you're looking for all of these items in one place, they're attached in the calendar event that Ms. Burt sent out today. And right now we will take roll. Brittany, please take the roll.
Chair Gavney.
Present.
Vice Chair Sandsted.
Present.
Representative Cresha.
Present.
Representative Bennett.
Present.
Representative Daniels.
Present.
Representative Damon.
Present.
Representative Drazkowski. Representative Drazkowski. Representative Erickson.
Present.
Representative Feist.
Present.
Representative Jordan.
Present.
Representative Marquardt.
Present.
Representative Mueller.
Present.
Representative Richardson. I see her in the waiting room. I'm admitting her now. I'll come back to her on the roll call. Representative Thompson.
Thompson, present.
Representative Wolgamott.
Wolgamott, present.
Representative Zhang.
Present.
Representative Joachim.
Present.
Representative Richardson.
Present.
Perfect. And I see Representative Drazkowski in the waiting room. I'm letting him in right now as well. Representative Drazkowski.
Present.
Perfect. That is the roll, and we do have a quorum.
Thank you so much. Representative Marquardt, have you had an opportunity to review the minutes of Tuesday, April 6th? And if so, would you like to move those minutes for approval?
Madam Chair, I'll move approval of the April 6, 2021 minutes of the Education Finance Committee.
Thank you very much. Any discussion to the Marquardt motion?
Madam Chair.
Representative Erickson.
Just a technical change. VIC, I think, should be VICE Vice. So
thank you.
Just a technical change.
Thank you. Noted. We will make that update. And any discussion to the Marquardt motion with that change? Hearing none, all in favor, please say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed, same sign. Very good. Motion carries, and the minutes will be adjusted and placed on file. Members, today we are going to be hearing from a wide variety of voices from the provisions contained in the DE to House File 1065. I hope you'll find their comments instructive as we approach our final work on the omnibus bill. In order to hear from as many members of the public as possible, we won't be pausing for questions. Also, please direct your attention to the letters and written testimony that Ms. Burt has put into our virtual packets today. And members of the public who are signed up to testify, thank you for taking time out of your day to share your thoughts with us. And in just a moment, we'll begin. I also want to just make a quick mention. Yesterday, we left off in committee with Ms. Adrian's going through the runs, basically. She has agreed to hold off on that just so we can get through testimony. If there's time at the end, perhaps we can pick up on that. So today, we're going to begin our testimony with Commissioner of the Department of Education, Heather Mueller. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Madam Chair, and thank you very much. I'm Heather Mueller, Commissioner of Education. Thank you for the opportunity to provide some comments today on the House Education Budget and Policy Omnibus Bill. First, Chair Dabney and Chair Richardson, I want to recognize the work that you've done this session, focusing on the important matters that we face as a state in making our way through the COVID-19 pandemic and the important issues that underlie our ongoing disparities in opportunity and achievement. your work in constructing and passing a strong summer bill that provides supports for academic services, students receiving special education services, tutoring, enrichment, mental health, post-secondary opportunities, adult basic education, and our littlest learners as we look to recover from the COVID-19 pandemic this summer, reinforces our commitment to keep our students at the center of all of our decisions. Thank you for including so many investments and policies that align with the Governor and Lieutenant Governor's priorities and bills. This bill's nearly $725 million makes important investments in our public education system and creates transformational policy for all of our students, those of all races, ethnicities, religions, economic statuses, gender identities, sexual orientations, abilities, and zip codes. So many of the proposals support the whole child and all of the needs they have in order to reach their academic potential. And our needs are even greater now as we engage in the recovery from the COVID-19 pandemic. I'm extremely pleased to see the investments in many of the funding formulas that the governor proposed. The 2% each year in the biennium and an additional 0.5% per year in the TALES will provide critical funding for districts to ensure that we have student-centered programming and supports and retain staff as we recover from the pandemic. I'm also excited to see the formula linked to inflation. I'm happy to see a serious investment in buying down the special education cross subsidy as the governor proposed, because we will always need to support our students who receive special education services. As these costs grow, we must continue to provide our students with the supports that they deserve. The governor, Lieutenant Governor, my colleagues, and I have heard from our communities about the investments needed to better serve our EL students. The funding in this bill to buy down the EL cross subsidy will support expanded opportunities and programs. I also greatly appreciate your investment in the governor's request to fund a team of public engagement and translation specialists at the department, as well as translation funding for our districts. This is critical to engaging our families to better meet the needs of our students and demonstrates our respect for the value of their first languages. In a summer bill, you invested funds to make up for the enrollment loss. We know that the impact does not just stop here, but we will have an impact on compensatory revenue next year. Thank you for digging deep and putting money toward this revenue stream. For our littlest and earliest learners, thank you for continuing to fund the 4,000 voluntary pre-kindergarten slots that are set to expire. These seats provide access to high-quality learning opportunities for some of us and for our most historically underserved early learners. It's also very promising to see the investments in tutoring in the summer bill, and I would have liked to have seen the governor's proposal regarding ongoing funding for tutoring find a home in this bill as well. I'm thankful to see funding to expand rigorous coursework opportunities for our BIPOC students and students in Greater Minnesota. We know that when students have access to courses like CTE, AP, IB, and concurrent enrollment, achievement increases. This program and several others in this bill invest resources to increase access to concurrent enrollment opportunities by ensuring that our educators have the qualifications to teach these courses. More and more, we know that putting the child first also requires us to provide supports that meet our students where they are and values who they are. And that's why I'm thankful to see this bill place a focus on equity. It includes many important provisions from the governor's bill, which support all students, but includes critical and much needed changes to ensure that our Black, Brown, and Indigenous students and students receiving special education services are treated equitably in a safe, welcoming, and inclusive environment. I fully support the inclusion of ethnic studies in our state academic standards. As the governor has said, our students should see themselves in what they learn, and our classroom content should reflect the contributions of the diverse communities we have in our Minnesota community. That starts with our academic standards. This bill provides the necessary funding for staff at MDE to implement those standards. I equally support the inclusion of Indigenous Education for All, which provides funding and policies to create programming, staff, and resources to support all students learning about the cultural heritage and historical and current contributions of our tribal nations. I'm pleased to see the range of strong investments and policies that support our American Indian students and their unique cultural identity, which is paramount to culturally inclusive schools. The additional investment and programmatic changes to the Minnesota Indian Teacher Training Program will increase teacher diversity by increasing access to teacher candidates. We also greatly appreciate the ongoing funding for tribal relations training for school leaders. These trainings have been of great value for our state employees, and we expect that will be the same for our school leaders. Funding for data analytics allows our Office of American Indian Education counts of American Indian students that more accurately our Canadian population so that they may be more strategic, build capacity, and better support our American Indian students. We also strongly believe the policies around prohibiting demeaning mascots, allowing cultural regalia at graduation ceremonies, allowing schools to share educational data with tribal nations, and improving processes for parent committees will greatly enhance the teaching and learning environment for our American Indian students. Thank you, Chair Richardson, for setting the strong expectation around prohibiting suspensions for our kindergarten through grade three students. We know that our BIPOC students and students receiving special education services are disproportionately represented in our statewide discipline data, and non-exclusionary discipline approaches will help to support the prohibition of suspensions. And that's why we also appreciate seeing the governor's comprehensive non-exclusionary policy package, as well as funding to assist in their implementation. In order for our students to succeed academically, they need to be in our classrooms. All of our students will also greatly benefit from the investments in a multi-tiered system of support, which will provide grants to districts to implement various models that tailor individualized academic and behavioral supports to our students. The pandemic has also accelerated a mental health crisis for our students. The funding in this bill for support for our student support personnel, like our counselors, our nurses, our school social workers, will also be incredibly important as we are thinking about the support of our mental health and behavioral needs in schools. We also know that we have a shortage of trained professionals in these areas, so I wish we would have seen some investment in our school programs that would help build exposure and interest in these fields. We also would like to see dedicated funding for a health services professional at the Department of Education, because we have heard from many education partners that this is crucial to providing support for our districts and charter schools. We also know that providing students and families with wraparound services is an evidence-based improvement strategy that increases high-quality learning opportunities. It is also good to see the support for the Minnesota Youth Council. Youth participating in our civic life is critical to the success and engagement of our next generation of leaders. I'm also happy to see our robust policies that support social-emotional learning, restorative practices, and reducing restrictive procedures. These are all fundamental evidence-based strategies and practices that support student well-being and provide education for the whole child. The Omnibus Bill proposes a range of important investments and policies in teacher diversity, training, and quality that I'm also happy to see. Investments in our Grow Your Own initiatives and enhanced pathways have proven to diversify our educator workforce. This bill continues that work. Thank you for including funding for professional development on trauma-informed practices and anti-bias training. This work, run out of our Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion Center, will equip our educators with tools and skills to combat the effects of the COVID-19 pandemic and the racial equity pandemic. I'd like to also have seen investments in educator career pathways and statewide mentoring. It is time that we have a statewide induction model to build out and sustain our teacher workforce. I commit to working with you on this as we meet with the Senate. I'm happy to see so much focus on teacher quality and supports, especially those proposals that align with the governor's bill. Eliminating the basic skills test is one important step in getting rid of an artificial barrier to teaching, to the teaching profession, that does very little to evaluate teachers' ability to teach in a classroom. Allowing ABE and ECFE teachers to be part of the bargaining unit ensures that protections and fair treatment extend to more educators. And making modifications to the qualifications for tier three licensure ensures that most of those are getting a tier three license have the appropriate training that is more indicative of a quality practice in the classroom. Finally, we appreciate the value this bill places on the work the department does for our students, educators, schools, and communities. The programs we create, the support that we provide, the systems, the structures at MDE are all meant to ensure that our students, each and every one, has access, participates, is represented, is valued, seen, and heard, and has options in their lives. We also work to ensure that our libraries are available and provide access to each and every community member with resources and services that create opportunities for learning and support literacy and education. The operating adjustment in future years will allow us to maintain current levels of service, and the legal funds will help to cover legal costs due to large lawsuits that significantly impact MDE's ability to support students, educators, and schools. The significant investment in data modernization systems, or EDFI, will support more accurate data gathering to help fully implement laws like the All Kids Count Act. We also appreciate the inclusion of several provisions that support the work of the department, including language that provides relief to districts and schools on implementing standards, but also allows the department to continue our standards review and revision work and district support. This allows our Social Studies Standards Committee, which is the most diverse in Minnesota's history, to do their work. Thank you as well for the investments in other entities like Pelsby, State Academies, and Perpich. Thank you again, Chair Dabney and Chair Richardson, for the investments and policies in this bill. This is an extremely strong bill that will serve our students, educators, schools, and communities well for years to come. I look forward to the opportunity to work with you on our final package. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Up next, we have Alex Liuzzi, the Executive Director of the Professional Educator Licensing and Standards Board. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Alex Liuzzi. I'm the Executive Director of the Professional Educator Licensing and Standards Board, otherwise known as PELSB. We would like to thank members for this thoughtful, comprehensive bill. We believe it would solidify, clarify, and strengthen tier licensure for the future and support the overall work of PELSB to ensure every student has high-quality educators. While the language in this bill that came from House File 1376 received ample testimony and discussion, we wanted to highlight just a few areas to address those address issues since those hearings. First of all, Representative Frazier worked with stakeholders, legislators, and teachers to understand the full impact of changes in that legislation, specifically changes to Tier 2 and Tier 3 pathways. The current language keeps the new requirement that districts support their Tier 1 and Tier 2 teachers moving up the tiers, but Representative Frazier thoughtfully proposed a small change to the Tier 3 pathway to specifically address the impact to teachers of color, which is seen in this version of the omnibus bill. Additionally, Representative Frazier and PELSB continued to meet with Tier 2 teachers who had questions about the impact of these changes. And without exception, they were all teachers who are currently prevented from a Tier 3 license because of licensure tests, not because of pathways that require no teacher preparation. All of these individuals would actually and finally be able to receive a Tier 3 license if the language in this bill becomes law. Specifically, more than 250 teachers of color stuck on a Tier 2 license because of content pedagogy testing barriers, and an estimated 200 content and language experts who were removed from the classroom when the bachelor's degree requirement was passed. Finally, in 2015, the legislature did significant work to pass a bill that supported the smooth transfer of out-of-state teachers to become licensed in Minnesota. The language of tiered licensure took us a step backward. This bill addresses each of those areas and greatly streamlines pathways for out-of-state teachers to move to and quickly be licensed in Minnesota. This bill does what everyone agrees is essential: systematically, with both policy and funding proposals, to not only increase teachers who are Black, Indigenous, and people of color, but to monitor and evaluate strategies toward that progress. PELSB strongly supports this bill, and thank you for your efforts.
Thank you, Mr. Liuzzi. Testifiers, you have all been instructed to keep your comments to 3 minutes or less. We have a very, very long list of people who have signed up, and in order to get to everyone, we would appreciate it if you would stick to the 3 minute time limit. And I will apologize in advance if I need to cut you off and stop the testimony in order to get through everything. First up, we have Scott Kronquist, the Executive Director of the Association of Metropolitan School Districts, and on deck is Molly Chase. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Scott Kronquist, and I serve as the Executive Director of the Association of Metropolitan School Districts. Thank you for the opportunity to share some comments, and thank you for your work on this bill. My testimony today is also on behalf of MASA, MREA, and C. One of our top legislative priorities for many years has been to bring greater stability to Minnesota's education funding system. And I'm going to focus my testimony on several provisions in the bill that go a long way toward achieving that goal. In fact, these would be some of the most consequential changes in many years to enhance the predictability of the funding system. First, we greatly appreciate the 2% per year increase in the formula. But perhaps even more importantly, the bill makes a down payment toward linking the formula to inflation in the next biennium, and then fully links the formula to inflation starting in fiscal year 26. This has been a top priority for school leaders for many years, and it is difficult to overstate just how significant this could be in making our funding system more predictable. Also importantly, the bill addresses the cross subsidies in the special education and English learner programs. The special education cross-subsidy is currently at $700 million statewide. Historically, this has meant that a significant share of any approved formula increase would go towards paying that growing cross-subsidy. By holding this cross-subsidy flat, the 2% formula increase will actually be a 2% formula increase. Like special education, we have a significant shortfall or cross-subsidy in the English learner program. In fact, EL funding has not been increased since 2003. The increase in the EL formula and linking it to the general education formula will provide significant budgetary relief and again, help stabilize the funding system. Another provision that we have long advocated for is allowing our locally elected school boards to renew an existing referendum if it is at the same level and does not result in a tax increase. This will save thousands of taxpayer dollars and again, stabilize the funding system. It also acknowledges and respects the fact that school board members are elected by the very same voters who elect legislators and city and county officials. Finally, making the 4,000 VPK School Readiness Plus slots permanent greatly adds stability to the funding system. Madam Chair and members, many of our school districts right now are going through what has become an unfortunate spring ritual, sending layoff notices out to their probationary teachers because they don't know the level of funding they will receive next year or the year after. This is a tremendously disruptive process for staff, administrators, students, and family. The provisions in the bill that I have mentioned would take us a long way toward ending or at least greatly reducing this annual ritual. Thank you again for the opportunity to testify and for including these groundbreaking provisions in the bill that would help bring stability to Minnesota's education funding system.
Thank you, Mr. Kronquist. Molly Chase, you are up. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed. Matt Shaver, you are on deck.
My name is Molly Chase. I have a sick toddler at home with me, so she may make an appearance either in voice or in person. First of all, I thank you for the opportunity to speak. HF 1065 includes funding for Purpich Center for Arts Education, and I truly thank you for that. By contrast, the Senate's Education Finance Omnibus Bill calls for Purpich to be abolished and sold for parts. So I feel a great deal of urgency in reminding this committee how central Purpich is to both educators and students across the entire state. Purpich is made up of three parts: professional development for educators, a lending library of arts and education materials, and a high school that offers intensive arts education, free tuition, and housing for students. You may recall a 2017 audit revealed areas of improvement with focus on the reach of the professional development program. I just want to make sure you know that that audit did its job. Purpich has long addressed every single issue and is thriving under new leadership. Last year alone, Purpich's professional development program worked with more than 2,000 educators in 304 school districts throughout the state, offering expertise not only in music, but in dance, visual arts, media arts, and theater. Of the three areas of Purpich, it is the high school that appears to be a focus, so I would like to address that now. The high school is growing and excelling. Purpich's graduation rate ranges from 94 to 100%. ACT scores are above the Minnesota average, and 75% of AP scores are at 3 or higher. Last year, high school enrollment increased by 15%, and this year it's projected to increase by 17%. In a pandemic year when public school systems have understandably struggled to maintain their enrollment, Purpich has seen an increase in applications, with 40% of applicants coming from outside the 7-county metro area. Purpich's high school offers studies in 6 areas, not only music, but dance, literary arts, media arts, theater, and visual arts. In addition to college preparatory work, students receive 15 hours of intensive art studies a week. That's far more than what most schools can offer, and it's difficult to imagine parents being able to afford 15 hours of private instruction each week. The curriculum emphasizes collaborative work as well as technical and creative excellence. As a state agency, Purpich is not funded using the per pupil funding method, but based on a general fund appropriation. Founded in 1985, Purpich's funding has remained relatively steady for the last 20 years. Please remember that Purpich is not eligible to receive levy dollars, to propose a referendum, or to benefit from per pupil increases that school districts may receive. It has been proposed that arts education could be delivered more efficiently online, and as you can see, I strongly disagree. We learned from the pandemic that nothing replaces in-person learning, whether it's math or science or sports or the arts. All over the state, students who worked hard on their academics and their arts portfolios are sharing their joy on social media that they'll be attending Purpich next year. The Senate's version of this bill would cut their education short. I implore you to protect funding for Purpich, for this generation of students, for Purpich's incredibly devoted teachers and staff, for educators all over the state, and for generations to come. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Chase. Up next is Matt Shaver, the Policy Director with Ed Allies, and on deck is Julie Bunn. Mr. Shaver, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Chair Sansed, Chair Dabney, members of the committee, good morning. My name is Matt Shaver, Policy Director at Ed Allies, a statewide education advocacy nonprofit dedicated to ensuring that students are at the center of policymaking. As a former teacher, I'll be sharing some glows and some grows for this committee's omnibus bill. There are many important provisions and two that we have serious concerns with. Starting with proposed changes to special education funding on lines 171.13 through 172.9. These changes undermine a fundamental principle of Minnesota Special Education Law 125A03, further eroding protections for students with disabilities that were codified more than 60 years ago. In Minnesota, it is the responsibility of the home district to provide for the special education of students with disabilities, which includes funding, even if that student attends school in another district. At first glance, that may seem counterintuitive. Why would a district have to pay for a student's education who goes to school somewhere else? In order to understand the purpose, you have to look back to special education in Minnesota before 1957. Minnesota had allowed but not required special education courses going back to 1915, but 40 years later, special education was still only offered in 30 of 87 counties. Many children with disabilities either had no school to go to or were segregated and institutionalized and sent to learn far away from home because their resident districts did not have special education programs. By requiring every district to provide special education services or allowing a student to enroll somewhere else at the resident district's expense, in 1957, the Minnesota legislature guaranteed an education to all students near their home and turned children that society had traditionally discarded into students by saying to kids with the highest needs, you deserve an education no matter where you live and no matter your need. Proponents of these changes will likely argue pejoratively that charter schools are giving students with disabilities, quote, Cadillac services, as if that were a bad thing. Giving students with disabilities the services they need and creating an appropriately ambitious program is something that I would hope every educator and every school was striving for. Special education is expensive, as it should be. These changes, however, do not solve the challenges of special education funding. Instead, they seek savings for a couple of districts by unfairly targeting some public schools that serve 10,000 students with disabilities and asking them to cut services, while the other portion of public schools serving 130,000 students with disabilities will continue to proceed as usual. We urge you not to go in this unproductive path direction. Moving on, as you know, we have significant concerns with some of the proposed changes to tiered licensure, most notably closing pathways to tier two on lines 110.2 through 112.4. We urge the committee to reconsider limiting the pool of who can be a teacher and rolling back a commitment made in this body just a few years ago. Now for the close. We support student-centered provisions that eliminate dismissals for K-3 students, add an on-track for graduation indicator for ninth grade students in the World's Best Workforce Report, as well as gathering disaggregated data on rigorous coursework enrollment. Finally, eliminating lunch shame, improving the authorizer corrective action process, promoting equitable funding through compensatory revenue reforms. There are more provisions to be proud of that we highlight in our written comments. I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify today. Thank you all for your public service.
Thank you, Mr. Shaver. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Sun. Please state your name for the record and proceed. On deck is Emily Peterson.
Good morning, Chair Dabney and members. My name is Julie Bunn. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Council on Economic Education. I want to thank the Chair and members of the committee for including an appropriation for the Minnesota Council on Economic Education in this bill, found in Article 2, Section 67, Subdivision 18, and also for underscoring the importance of including personal finance standards in the state academic standards in Section 66. The mission of the Minnesota Council on Economic Education is to equip all Minnesotans with the economic and financial literacy understanding needed to succeed in today's complex economy. Continued legislative support will help us achieve that goal by providing robust professional development for Minnesota teachers throughout the state to help them deliver Minnesota's economic and personal finance learning standards and benchmarks, and by offering related capstone experiences to all Minnesota students. The work of the council touches on many great challenges facing our times: jobs in the economy, the pandemic, climate change, and racial justice. We have designed our programs to help meet these challenges. Economic and financial literacy are not just buzzwords. Research has shown that improved financial literacy increases the level of household assets, increases the likelihood that a person will save and invest, and leads to stable communities and better trained workers. Higher economic and financial literacy also means more informed and active citizens, which strengthens our democracy. Beginning in March 2020, in addition to transitioning all its teacher professional development and student programming to online platforms, the council began delivering.
Madam Chair.
Representative Krisha.
Yeah, I just don't know what the interference is, but I'm not getting any of her testimony.
I heard it too. If you are not on mute, and you should be, please check your microphones. Ms. Bunn, please continue.
And just try not to rustle your papers, Ms. Bunn.
Okay.
Beginning in March 2020, in addition to transitioning all its teachers' professional development and student programming to online platforms, the Council began delivering innovative programming aimed to help teachers deliver instruction remotely. In addition to this, for more than 15 years now, the Council has worked to address racial and gender gaps in access to economics and personal finance. The Council has launched targeted programs and increased outreach to better meet the needs of underserved schools, students, and BIPOC and immigrant communities throughout the state. In addition, since the 1990s, the Council has been unique among all state councils in the country for developing curriculum and leading workshops on environmental economics and sustainability issues, including those that address climate change. In conclusion, the Council is here to partner with all of you to help meet these challenges. We welcome continuing input and feedback regarding our work and programs from you and all parties interested in advancing economic and financial literacy. We particularly look forward to and welcome ongoing discussion about how best to meet the needs of BIPOC students and underserved communities with respect to economic and financial literacy education. As economic and financial literacy is key to narrowing the achievement and opportunity gaps, and thus ultimately the economic and wealth disparities. On behalf of the Council, again, I thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Bunn. On deck is Sherry Munyon, and up next is Emily Peterson, Special Education Director of Harvest Best Academy and Mastery School. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Emily Peterson. Thank you, members of the committee, for having me today. I am a director of special education who serves two schools on the north side of Minneapolis. I first want to thank the committee for the extensive work that has been done so far on House File 1065. This is a strong bill that finances many areas of need within the state of Minnesota. I'm here today, however, to address a concern to a specific change in House File 1065 in terms of special education funding for charter schools providing special education services. I understand and respect that a change needs to be made in the future to special education funding, both on a state and a federal level. However, children should not be penalized for their choice to attend charter school. These proposed changes, as set forth in House File 1065, could potentially negatively impact the overall funding for charter schools, mainly the two charter schools that I support. The students and families on the north side of Minneapolis who chose to enroll their children at our schools would be greatly impacted. Many of these students chose to enroll in our school due to their needs not being met in other districts or other settings. This change in funding could potentially mean that the services children receive would change. I ask the committee to recognize that when a child with a disability enters a charter school, that charter school must stand ready to serve. Many times that means developing a program or support for a learner from scratch. There is a significant cost associated with the development of programming from the bottom up. Currently, the two schools that I represent each have a federal setting three programs. We have co-teaching supports and provide a wide range of support from resource-based classes, push-in, and co-teaching instruction. The bill also fails to address what would happen to charter schools in regards to maintenance of effort, or most commonly known as MO. If a district spends less on special education services from year to year, there's a potential for them not to maintain effort and thus have a proportionate reduction of their general education aid reduced. This could have significant financial consequences for charter schools if not addressed in the bill. I implore this committee to not approve this bill as is and continue to allow special education funding to follow the child and meet the needs of each learner. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Peterson. On deck right now is Veronica Castellano Vasquez, and up next is Sherry Munyon. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Madam Chair, Representative Dabney, committee members. My name is Sherry Munyon, and I am testifying on behalf of the Literacy Action Network. Thank you for including several measures benefiting our adult learners in the omnibus bill. In particular, we greatly appreciate inclusion of the measure which links future ABE funding increases to increases for the K-12 General Education Basic Formula Allowance, a necessary change to ensure our continuity of service. It is important not only for the adult learners themselves, but for the educational support they are able to provide their children. Literacy Action Network supports the language to ensure that a reduction in contact hours will not reduce the statewide amount of adult basic education aid. The Teachers of Color Act is important for both adult learners as well as children. Members, we thank you for your prior passage of the summer program funding. It is our hope that you might be able to include that in the final omnibus bill. Given the challenges so many of our adult learners face in accessing devices, connectivity, and digital literacy instruction, we anticipate a significant amount of that funding would be used to increase capacity for our adult learners in these areas. This will pay future dividends, allowing many adult learners to continue their education and prepare for meaningful employment. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Ms. Munyon. On deck right now is Ramona Kiddo Stately. Up next is Veronica Castellanos Vasquez. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
My name is Veronica Castellanos Vasquez, and I want to express my gratitude for the opportunity to speak to you today about teacher licensure barriers in Minnesota. We represent a group of teachers of color with Tier 2 licensed teacher. I teach kindergarten at Emerson Spanish Immersion. I appreciate your willingness to listen to us today and with the intent to learn about our challenges, our experiences, and our contributions as immigrants and Hispanic teachers to our communities and the state of Minnesota as educators. We all come from different countries where Spanish is the native language. We have been blessed to find opportunities to contribute our cross-cultural and multilingual expertise in the United States system. We excel at our careers as educators. We are here to share our stories and experiences as we seek your support in recognizing our legitimate academic background and our experiences as educators. As I mentioned earlier, I'm a Tier 2 licensed teacher after completing a master's degree in education in bilingual programs with the University of Minnesota. After many years as a teacher, earning an award as a Fox 9 top teacher in 2019, and 9 years as a bilingual associate educator, I still don't have my Tier 3 license because I haven't been able to pass the content exams. I'm good on what I do, and I love my job, but standardized testing of this nature is not culturally relevant to teacher candidates like us who grew up and completed undergraduate studies in our countries of origin. The current tests are designated for monolingual English speakers. Too often, test questions that are otherwise equal in merit are differentiated between good, better, and best answers by nuances of the English language and not by the methodological content of the answer. This is supported by statistics that non-native English speakers consistently score lower on these assessments or abandon education altogether when they fail to grasp the language nuances necessary to pass. We hope that you are persuaded to see us and other teachers like us as valuable assets in the education system. Parents seek programs like the one at Emerson Spanish Immersion not only because of the benefits of being bilingual, but also because of the multicultural learning experience. We ask for assessment testing changes that are better able to measure our readiness to be in the classrooms. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Vasquez. On deck right now is Paul Spies, and up next is Ramona Kiddo Stately, Project Director of We Are Still Here Minnesota. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I am Ramona Kiddo Stately. I am the director of We Are Still Here Minnesota, a project of the Native Governance Center located in St. Paul. We Are Still Here Minnesota is an effort to change the narrative about Native Americans to accurately reflect their history, existence, and ongoing contributions to the state, and to create greater mutual understanding between Native and non-Native Minnesotans. You have many other testifiers, so I will keep my remarks brief. My colleagues and I want to applaud you, Chair Dabney, and members of the committee for including Governor Walz's proposal for Indigenous Education for All and Tribal Relations Training for School Leaders in the Delete Everything Amendment. Additionally, we thank you for including other provisions in your bill, which recognize the importance of Native American students, educators, and communities in the state's K-12 system. Many of us who have long and deep experience in Indian education know that exposing non-Native students to a more accurate understanding of the tribes and Native peoples can lead to a great mutual respect and civic cohesion. Indigenous Education for All is not intended to diminish what is already taught in our schools, but to enrich it and to deepen our future citizens' shared capacity to understand each other. Again, thank you for the opportunity to briefly address you, and thank you for your work.
Thank you, Ms. Stately. On deck is Tony Sanna, and up next is Paul Spies with the Legislative Action Team Lead Coalition to Increase Teachers of Color and American Indian Teachers in Minnesota. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record. Proceed.
Good morning, Chair Dabney and members. My name is Paul Spies with the Coalition to Increase Teachers of Color and American Indian Teachers in Minnesota, speaking on behalf of some 1,800 coalition members, including more than 55 state councils and organizations that have endorsed the Increased Teacher of Color Act, House File 217, led by Representative Hassan, which you heard in this committee. Thank you, thank you, thank you, Chair Dabney and Representative Richardson, for your leadership in prioritizing the policies and investments proposed in your omnibus bills, and to staff for their hard work over the last several months. We greatly appreciate you adopting rather than cherry picking the comprehensive proposals for systemic change from the Increased Teacher of Color Act that built upon previous acts, which garnered bipartisan support in the past and Republican authorship in the Senate this year. Only this bundle of changes to both policies and increased investments addressing recruitment, preparation, licensing, and retention will lead to systemic change and start annually increasing the percentage of BIPOC teachers serving students throughout the state. Your historic omnibus bill this year does even more than the 2019 omnibus bill, which I also called historic back then, because more needs to be done each year that our K-12 student population becomes increasingly diverse, but our teacher workforce doesn't keep pace. The historic COVID pandemic and the era of racial reckoning call for bold action to address long-standing disparities, and your bill answers the call for needed bold change. The only disappointment with the omnibus bill is not coming close to our second most important investment proposal to increase funding for the Collaborative Urban and Greater Minnesota Educator of Color, or CUGMIC, grant program. We see that the Office of Legislative Auditor's report caused pause regarding that program, and we look forward to further discussions about the report as well as solutions to address the OLA's recommendations to the legislature. As you'll eventually see in my supplementary written testimony I submitted this morning, the amending language provided by the coalition in collaboration with various institutions throughout the state is a good answer to the OLA's recommendations. Again, thank you so much for your leadership, and please keep prioritizing these proposals in your conference committee negotiations. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Spies. On deck is Laylee Fatehi, and up next is Tony Sanna, CEO and founder of the Sanna Foundation. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Sanna. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
My name is Tony Sanna, CEO of the Sanna Foundation. I want to start off by thanking Chair Dabney for allowing this opportunity and for putting our bill in the budget. We really appreciate it. I want to also thank our chief author, Mariani, and our past authors, Hewitt and Tamatice. We really think this sets a tone in investing in equity and however you define equity, not just in the Twin Cities, but across the state to create more equitable environments. Your willingness to put this inside of base funding says that you're willing to make a long-term investment in equitable action across the state and reward organizations through innovation that do that. I personally most excited that this has been a bipartisan bill. It's been funded over the last 5 years. And so by putting it in the base, we increase efficiency and add on a teacher pathway program. As we heard Mr. Spies speak, and which we totally support, there is a shortage. So we are able to do two things and support and partner with existing programs. We love the fact that it's collaborative. And then when in the hearing, we had both sides of the aisle agree on something that, and it's nice to see, honestly, that we know that everyone can agree on good things, and kids are good things. And so to come together as a community, it was awesome. And I'm glad that we were able to be a part of that. We've already had excitement. We have meetings set up with leadership from the Minneapolis Public School System as 10 other superintendents. We did last Monday, and we're exploring other places across the state to not only run the Dreamline program, but to have them join our existing pathway programs. So we're really excited about that. And we take this very seriously in being inclusive. Like when we moved to St. Cloud and Rochester, and we're prepared to move to different parts of the state to be truly inclusive, because we know equity means a lot of different things in a lot of places. We do a lot of things at the Sana Foundation. We run summer camps. We distribute a lot of food. We run a community center. We run leadership workshops. We do police training nationally and internationally. And we do peace building all over the world. But this bill particularly focuses on Minnesota, an in-school academic support and teacher mentoring program. We support all the other things that we've heard today in the TOCAT bill and after-school bills and food bills, as well as mental health bills, because we know those partnerships will help us do better. But we'll be great stewards of this money, using it for educational purposes and creating more teachers of color while helping our youth across the state of Minnesota. Thank you, Chair Dabney, and thank you for the committee for being collaborative and allowing us to do this work in the state.
Thank you, Mr. Sana. On deck is Anthony Carranza, and up next is Leili Fatehi. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Leili Fatehi, and I represent Decoding Dyslexia of Minnesota, a parent and educator-led advocacy effort working to increase equitable access to educational interventions for dyslexia in the public education system. I also represent today the Minnesota Literacy Coalition, which includes Decoding Dyslexia of Minnesota, the Reading Center in Rochester, Groves Academy, and the International Dyslexia Association's Upper Midwest Branch. We appreciate the opportunity to testify today on House File 1065. Thank you for the bill's requirement in Article 3, Section 10, that board-approved teacher preparation programs for elementary education, early childhood education, special education, and reading intervention include instruction on dyslexia modeled on the practice standards of the International Dyslexia Association. Thank you also for the bill's investment in Article 2 of $8 million per year to support Minnesota's Reading Corps program. We also appreciate the Article 2, Section 64 requirement that teachers receive professional development based on the science of reading. However, we remain concerned that this requirement is tied to district staff development revenue or literacy incentive aid, as well as the lack of specificity as to the criteria for that professional training. We believe the teacher professional development would be strengthened and more effective with additional support for providing grants to teachers to complete training in MDEs, language essentials for teachers of reading and spelling, that's letters as the acronym program, which provides teachers with training in the components and principles of science-based reading instruction. This was the proposal that was offered in Representative Edelson's House File 288, which the committee heard earlier this session. The Letters program has a proven track record in Minnesota as well as in other states. And the Letters proposal in HF 288 was developed in partnership over several years with bipartisan members of both the House and Senate, MDE, MSBA, EdMIN, and the Dyslexia Literacy Coalition, and was included in the governor's proposed budget. Funding for Letters has also been included in the Senate's Education Omnibus, and as such, we look forward to continuing to work with the chair and other members to find ways to strengthen support and resources for teacher professional development this session. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Fatehi. On deck is Deb Hanton. Up next is Anthony Carranza, journalist, educator, and multilingual speaker. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record. Proceed.
Thank you. My name is Anthony Carranza. Thank you for having me, chair and committee members. I will basically read a testimony that'll stem some personal anecdotes, educational experiences, and also some quotes. To start off, I'm a French immersion teacher at Edina Public Schools as a fourth grade first year. I support the bill, the House File 1065. I was born in the Caribbean in Venezuela to polyglot parents who speak English, Spanish, French, and Catalan. The importance of language, culture, and diversity in education have shaped my journeys throughout my lifetime. Prior to arriving in Minnesota, I taught in France for 3 years and 1 year in Colombia. Compiling all of these experiences have taken me down a wonderful odyssey of education. Specifically, being an educator and a classroom teacher is a noble mission to have in Minnesota. According to the Sahan Journal, out of the 2,500 Tier 2 teachers, 1,000 would actually earn a promotion to Tier 3, which some of my colleagues have expressed during their testimonies. And I am currently in a Tier 2. I have completed a master's program at the University of Minnesota with a focus on immersion and dual language education. I too have faced social and emotional professional barriers because I have to take the content exams. English is not my first language. Also, this year, under the extraordinary circumstances of the pandemic, I have taught in three learning models, hybrid, distance, and in-person. I've completed, as I said, a master's program with two practicums and a student teaching that included at Emerson Spanish Immersion. Finally, as it was said in some of the reports that I compiled, shortage areas, including teachers of color to qualify for a Tier 3 license after 3 years in the classroom with this bill would allow us to have more job security and also reach tenure. Also, the way that the current licensure system has been built does exclude teachers of color. With the enactment of this legislation, it would allow us to have more job security. And now, a couple of quotes. Language is the road map of a culture. It tells you where its people come from and where they're going, by Rita Mae Wurm. Finally, thank you so much for allowing me these three important minutes to testify and say how important it is to have this bill be put forward, enabled, enacted, and that's it. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Mr. Carranza. On deck is Corianne Carter. Up next is Deb Hanton, the Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of School Administrators. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Chair Sanstein, Chair Dabney, and members of the committee. I am Deb Hanton, the Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of School Administrators. Thank you for this opportunity to provide testimony that is also supported by AMSD, MSBA, and C. While we have concerns with some portions of HF 1065, we are supportive of the provision in HF 1065 allowing a distance learning option for school districts. It is essential for school districts to have the option to offer a distance learning program moving forward. Without this change to statute, families opting for distance learning would need to find an online learning provider, and the majority of school districts are not online learning providers. Converting every school district to also being an online learning provider is costly and unnecessary. School districts have a year of experience with distance learning, and a number of them have already consulted with teachers and drafted distance learning schedules for next year to meet the anticipated demand. Some are working across districts and will cooperate with one another to ensure licensed teachers are hired for their distance learning courses. We know there are countless reasons for students and their families to opt for distance learning rather than in-person instruction. As one superintendent has told me, it is not for she and her staff to judge the reasons some choose distance learning, but rather to create a quality program that enables students to thrive and to engage those students. This bill will enable students and families choosing distance learning to stay with their school district, with the teachers, school leaders, and communities they know and support. We respectfully ask that you consider allowing school leaders to work with representatives from their various bargaining units and their local school board to create and approve distance learning programs. This would allow school administrators and teachers the ability to make decisions based on the needs of their students. Thank you, Chair Sanstead, Chair Dabney, and members of the committee for your support of this provision, and most of all, for your service to the state.
Thank you, Ms. Hinton. On deck is Adora Land, and up next is Corianne Carter, Partner for Student Success Navigator. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you so much. Chair Davini and members of the committee, my name's Corianne Carter. I'm a navigator with United Way of Central Minnesota and also a mother of two kids. I have one right here with me right now. I wanted to thank you guys so much for your investment in the United Way and also Education Partnership Coalition. I also want to thank Representative Wilgamont for chief authoring the coalition bill, as well as the bill co-authors on this committee, Representative Feist, Representative Mueller, and also Representative Uokim. During this last year, we were able to support families in new and innovative ways. We provided over $230,000 to help families with basic needs. We also raised over $120,000 to help families raised over $120,000 to close distant learning gaps. I've personally spent time on the phone with multiple parents who seek assistance for rental help because they lost hours or their job due to the pandemic. I've helped families get connected to school resources and understanding the different learning platforms that were unfamiliar to them in order to help support their children's learning. This funding will enable the United Way Coalition members to provide a deeper level of support to more families as well as we collectively recover from the pandemic. I do want to thank you so much for allowing me to be here today and also for investing in our families.
Thank you so much, Ms. Carter. On deck is Denise Dietrich, and up next is Adora Land, Family Wraparound Supports Manager with the St. Paul Promise Neighborhood. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and go ahead, proceed.
Chair Dabney and members of the committee, my name is Adora Land Tolfrey, and I'm the Family Wraparound Partnership Program Manager with the St. Paul Promise Neighborhood and proud member of the St. Paul Promise Neighborhood community. I want to thank you for your support for the St. Paul Promise Neighborhood and Education Partnerships Coalition. In the midst of COVID-19 and civil unrest, St. Paul Promise Neighborhood partnered to create virtual learning summer programs for 6,000 families to continue to prevent summer learning loss. We have also assisted families impacted by the pandemic by providing housing assistance, access to technology for online learning, and provided wraparound support services through partnerships with local food shelves. Again, thank you for your investment in the St. Paul Promise Neighborhood and the Education Partnership Coalition. With this support, we will be able to develop deeper partnerships with more families to continue our work to close Minnesota's worst in the nation opportunity gaps. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ms. Tolfrey. On deck is Stephanie Shockley, and up next is Denise Dietrich with the Minnesota School Board Association. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Denise Dietrich, and I'm here testifying on behalf of the Minnesota School Boards Association. Our association represents all 333 public school boards across the state of Minnesota. We appreciate the opportunity to testify on 1065. Chair Dabney, thank you for the time and effort you and your committee and staff have put into constructing the House Omnibus Finance Policy Bill today. Today, I will be addressing only the finance portions of the bill since we have previously tested on the policy items. Stable and predictable funding is one of the highest priorities for school board members. Our school board members greatly appreciate the significant target of $725 million and believe that this bill makes significant strides towards stabilizing school funding at a time of great instability. It is for this reason we strongly support the following provisions: increasing the basic education formula by 2% each year for the next two fiscal years, as well as a 0.5% increase in the following 2 years. This will allow for long-term strategic planning and in addressing learning loss as students return to in-person school. Linking the increase in the basic formula to inflation for fiscal year 2022 and beyond. That acknowledges that inflation is real and must be addressed. Increasing a school district's unfunded pupil transportation expenses that more fairly addresses unreimbursed transportation costs, allowing a school board to renew an existing referendum levy by board resolution when it does not result in an increase in property taxes and is for the same duration as the existing levy. A majority, over 60% of the public, trust our local boards to do this. They understand the efficiency and the impact of it to provide stable programming for students. Increasing the special education cross-subsidy aid. The cross-subsidy is a budgeting issue that all of our school boards grapple with on a yearly basis. So this is helpful. Linking the increase in EL cross-subsidy reduction aid and the extended time revenue in FY24 to the increases in the basic formula allows for more predictable funding into the future. Permanently extending the existing VPK slots provides consistency in providing high-quality early education offering for parents, students, and the whole community. Student support personnel aid is needed to address the much needed supports like counselors, social workers, school-based mental health staff. Our boards know that this may look different across the state, and there needs to be enough aid to reach all children. As we have discussed often in this committee, enrollment is the driver of revenue. With declining enrollment, there is a cascading effect in staffing and then in opportunities for students. As you continue your work, we ask you not to lose sight of the enrollment hold harmless language in House File 4. Our boards have told us that their districts will be better equipped to meet their financial obligations incurred during the pandemic using this approach. School boards feel a sense of urgency to address the statewide teacher shortage. And
Ms. Dietrich, we are at time. You'll need to wrap up.
Okay, I thank you so much. As you are aware, the pandemic has presented enormous challenges for our students, parents, and teachers and other staff. And so accordingly, we believe it's imperative that policymakers refrain from enacting new mandates in the 2021 legislative session. And we look forward to working with you as this bill progresses throughout session. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Dietrich. On deck is Jesus Cervantes, and up next is Stephanie Shockley, teacher from the Justice Page Middle School. Please state your name for the record. Welcome and proceed.
Chair Dabney and members of the committee, my name is Stephanie Shockley, and I'm an English language teacher and differentiation specialist at Justice Page Middle School within the Minneapolis Public School System and a member of Educators for Excellence Minnesota, a teacher-led nonprofit with approximately 2,300 members across our state. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today on House File 1065. We are excited to support a number of provisions in this bill, including Representative Feist's House File 1144, which would remove the compensatory revenue cap, which would aid high poverty squires and require 80% of compensatory funds to be spent at the school site and on evidence-based practices. The use of non-exclusionary discipline policies and a ban on dismissals for students in grades kindergarten through third grade, which will reduce racial disparities and increase learning over time. Expansion of school performance measures to ensure broad participation in honors programming and to report how many students are on track for graduation. Historic investments in initiatives to hire diverse educators to ensure the teacher workforce reflects our student population. And we do believe the committee could go even further in this area. Our members remain opposed to changes in the bill, which alter Minnesota's tiered teacher licensing system. These changes will make it more difficult for teachers from diverse backgrounds to enter the profession. Unfortunately, in this bill, there are further restrictions on license renewals. We also believe that experienced, effective teachers should retain a path to a permanent Tier 3 license. These provisions threaten to erase years of progress after doors were opened by our new licensure system. Currently, over 20% of Tier 1 and Tier 2 teachers are teachers of color. Both funding and supporting our students that need it the most and diverse representation in our profession matter. I did not have a single teacher or mentor throughout my K-12 education that reflected my own experience, or for that matter, experiences outside of one common narrative that did not include me. My incredible students also have limited access to teachers that reflect their experiences. Diverse and inclusive representation provides BIPOC students with opportunities to encounter mirrors in their education and opportunities for all of our students to encounter windows into other existences. While I have seen educators from more diverse backgrounds in schools today than when I was in school, we have a very long way to go. Providing opportunities for experienced, effective, and diverse teachers to retain a path to permanent licensure means keeping educators in classrooms with our students. It means giving our underrepresented students their right to consistency and safety. Thank you again for the opportunity to testify today. Our members look forward to working with you over the next few weeks.
Thank you so much, Ms. Shockley. On deck is Emily Berkness. Up next is Jesus Cervantes, a first grade teacher with the Emerson Spanish Immersion Learning Center. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good morning, members and committee. Thank you for this great opportunity to share our experiences as educators. My name is Jose de Jesus Cervantes Quiroz, and I have a Tier 2 teaching license. I came from Mexico. I studied a bachelor and master degree in education. I've been teaching in two different countries, Mexico and the US, for almost 15 years. In Minneapolis Public Schools, it will be my seventh year in elementary Spanish immersion programs. I currently study in our certification program at the University of Minnesota. I represent a group of teachers of color. I'm here because my feeling is that Minnesota professional educator licensing and standards and also the laws are not functioning correctly for a teacher of color like us. Honestly, I feel the system of regulations to acquire a Minnesota teaching license is one of the most challenging obstacles as a non-native speakers. I've been asking other color teachers and I figured out that I'm not the only who has this problem. I noticed that the laws don't work as we expect to include us. It is a monolingual system that doesn't recognize our background knowledge in these English measuring instruments. I have exemplars scores in my teaching practice from the principals, mentors, and coaches. And most importantly, I build a strong relationship with parents. Sadly, Minneapolis Public Schools has a few bilingual substitutes and less than 20% of teachers of color. How would you change the laws and include to us? Another concern is about the test score. They are too high for non-native speakers. It has been taking me professional time away from my students' academic goals. It's hard to say, but I'm excluded of the system that is not working for all the color teachers. These situations make me feel stressed and sad because all the exams are in English. I'm working hard to improve my English knowledge during these monolingual exams, but I'm not successful yet. I'm willing to do all my best and educate with all my heart because I love my job. I love my families. Nevertheless, not passing the test make me feel frustrated and unwelcome in this system as a color teacher. I really appreciate your time in listening to our personal experiences. Besides, I'm fighting for equity and rights for all color teachers. Our students need us in an inclusive system. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Cervantes. On deck is Aaron Wannett, and up next is Emily Berkness, a homeschool parent. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed. Ms. Berkness, are you with us? Okay, we're going to move on. If she is with us, we'll try to come back to her testimony. On deck will be David Bucks, and up next is Aaron Wannett. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Hi, my name is Aaron Wannett. Chair Dabney and members of the committee, thank you for having me today. I'm a director of special education and also serve as the executive director for Indigo Education. Indigo Education is a nonprofit organization that has provided exceptional special education services to charter schools for about 20 years. Currently, Indigo Education serves 70 schools throughout Minnesota, and our 14-member Indigo Education leadership team has about more than 200 years of administrative support. We work to fulfill administrative and operational support to our client schools through providing training and cohorts for teachers of color, new special education teachers, and school leaders. I'm hopeful that a result of our testimony, or my testimony here today on behalf of my team, your group will be feel comfortable to reach out to my team and I on the matters of school choice for students with disabilities and charter schools. Our primary goal, or one of our primary goals, of Indigo Education is to make sure that children with disabilities have access to school choice. And because of our commitment to students and family, we oppose a segment of House File 0165. And that portion of the bill that outlines a cap for tuition billing for charter schools presents a discriminatory practice for charter schools who are public schools. And I realize that is not the intent of the bill, but in, by having the bill written as it is, that certainly does infringe upon students' access to school choice. A false narrative that exists is that charter school leaders believe that given their charter status and tuition billing system, that we charter schools can spend frivolously. In actuality, resources that are assigned to special education programs and individual students, for that matter, are defined by the IEP and based on the student's evaluated needs per federal and state law. Many students who enroll in our charter schools actually come to our charter schools having been evaluated by another public school and have an IEP in place prior to enrollment. Furthermore, I'd also like to offer that charter school spending is heavily monitored by program finance in terms of the Minnesota Department of Education, that program finance team. And charter schools are in the habitual practice of justifying our spending to the department at least annually. What's more is that charter schools are also highly interested in decreasing expenses through and acknowledge our fiscal responsibility and to collaborate with resident districts. Some of our 70 schools collaborate on a daily basis with the resident district to provide dynamic and powerful and effective programming for kids with disabilities, thus reducing the cost of special education and just overall. However, in other cases, the resident district will not even return our phone calls or have no interest in collaborating. Some of the same districts who are unwilling to engage and are frustrated by the funding formula are really unwilling to participate. And their costs would be decreased if we could have an open dialogue about how to share resources.
Thank you, Ms. Wannett. We are at time, so we need to move on. I appreciate your testimony. Up next, or on deck, I should say, is Emily Berkness. I see you have joined the call, but up next is David Bucks. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
My name is Emily Berkness. My husband and I have 7 children, the oldest of which is 19 and the youngest is 3. We've always homeschooled our kids. And I just want to thank all of you for your service to our great state and especially the students of our schools in all of their forms. I'm actually here to encourage you to oppose House File 1065 in its current form, primarily because of the burden it places on educators with the additional requirements to teach courses on Indigenous education from pre-K all the way through 12th grade. But to be clear, I am in no way opposed to educating our children on the vibrant history of Indigenous people. On the contrary, it has been one of my children's most fascinating subjects. And anyone tasked with the vast responsibility of providing a thorough, well-rounded, and excellent education for a child can attest to the overwhelming abundance of material to select from when assessing the best options for their students. From reading and writing, literature and language arts, math, science, social studies, including history, geography, economics, government and citizenship, health, physical education, and fine arts, I would submit to you that Indigenous education is definitely already being taught by any school serious about educating its students in history and culture. There's an obvious desire on the part of the bill's supporters to place a greater emphasis on the history of Indigenous people. Theirs is an epic story to tell, no doubt, but this bill is not the answer. The standards for language arts, mathematics, and science are all summed up in one single sentence in this bill. However, when it comes to the specifics regarding curriculum for Indigenous education, the language is extensive, combative, and even punitive. The bill requires curriculum for Indigenous education to be, quote, tribally endorsed, and it makes the Commissioner of Education, who's appointed by our duly elected governor, accountable to the Tribal Nations Education Committee. And if any school, public, private, or home is found to thought or thought to be in non-compliance with Indigenous curriculum requirements, they're to be referred to the Department of Human Rights. I'm sorry, but aside from the fact that the language in this bill is clearly not written to make friends or influence others, it's entirely unrealistic to add such a massive addition. Have the supporters of this bill seriously considered the overarching realities associated with giving or receiving a well-rounded and excellent education? It takes serious discipline and time to soundly educate a child on the core subjects of reading, writing, language arts, and mathematics. If a student is unable to master those things, how are they ever going to be able to achieve any meaningful academic success in the sciences or social studies and the like? Please have faith in the educators who are on the ground doing the actual teaching. No one can be an expert in everything, but we can give our students an excellent education without such micromanagement. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Berkness. Up or on deck is Michelle Chang. Up next is David Bucks, a parent advocate. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Bucks. Please state your name for the record and proceed. I believe you're on mute.
There Chair you Daphne, go. Vice Chair Stansteed and honorable committee members, my name is David Bucks. I live in rural Stearns County and I'm the father of five children. Thank you for your diligent work and for the opportunity to testify today. I'm speaking, like the previous speaker, against the inclusion of Indigenous education as a core subject area in Article 2, Section 3 of House File 1065. I have three concerns. First, the language in the bill reflects a dramatic change in standards for the knowledge and skills to be provided by our schools. Second, this dramatic change is ideologically driven, and so it has an impetus that comes from outside the intrinsic goals of education. Finally, such an ideologically driven and dramatic change infringes on the rights of parents. You can see how dramatic this change is in the awkward placement of Indigenous education alongside and on equal footing with four other traditional subject areas, reading and writing, math and science, social studies, and physical education. To suggest that Indigenous education, which really belongs as a part of social studies, merits its own major heading alongside these more fundamental subjects, reveals the dramatic character of this change. Such a dramatic change really represents a complete revision of the goals for education. This is what leads me to conclude that it's actually an ideologically driven change. Other evidence to that effect includes the provision in this bill, which refers non-compliance with Indigenous curriculum requirements to the Department of Human Rights. Moreover, the subtle inclusion of new definitions pertaining to educational excellence implies the tacit acceptance of critical race theory as true and foundational for education. For instance, in Article 2, Section 11, there are four relatively mundane terms already defined in Minnesota statutes, like instruction and curriculum. In this bill, the number of those definitions is doubled to include such terms as ethnic studies curriculum, anti-racist, culturally sustaining, and institutional racism. These are ideologically freighted terms, and by no means should the Minnesota legislature adopt educational policies reflecting such substantive changes on the basis of a theory that is still hotly contested and is roundly rejected by many. The inclusion of Indigenous education as a core subject is completely unprecedented. Such a revision of the goals for education on the basis of prevailing social and political winds is not only unwise for this generation, but it is unsound in setting a precedent for future generations. What theory will be the next to shoulder its way into our list of core subjects? Such caprice in setting educational goals destabilizes the whole enterprise, and of greatest concern to me, it disenfranchises me as a parent. I'll note that Minnesota statutes list parents as the first of those whose advice should be considered when developing standards. That I could be bound by this legislation to teach my children, whom I homeschool, to teach them a curriculum that must be tribally approved or else be reported to the Department of Human Rights is a complete contradiction in terms and a disastrous erosion of my rights as a parent. I urge the members to remove all requirements for Indigenous education, and I thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Bukes. On deck is Josh Donham, and up next is Michelle Chang, lead organizer with the Coalition of Asian American Leaders. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Hello, Chair Dabney and members of the committee. Thank you so much for having me today to testify on your education omnibus bill. My name is Michelle Chang. I am the lead organizer for education at the Coalition of Asian American Leaders, otherwise known as CAL. We are a social justice organization with a network of 4,000 Asian Minnesota leaders across the state. CAL is also part of the Minnesota Ethnic Studies Coalition, composed of over 30 organizations, including Education Liberation, UNIDOS, Education Minnesota, and Youth for Ethnic Studies. We appreciate that the House Education Omnibus Bill includes some provisions related to ethnic studies and funding for a position at MDE to hire a staff person to work on implementing ethnic studies. Thank you for your work on that. But on behalf of the Ethnic Studies Coalition, I am here today to ask that you support strengthening the ethnic studies language going forward. As a coalition, we are working on an amendment to ensure that ethnic studies is embedded across the standards, and it is our hope that the amendment is accepted. Curricula shapes how we think, understand, and act in this world, so making ethnic studies a stronger part of the standards is critical to ensuring our children are prepared for success and have a quality education. And it will enable students to better understand the rich heritage, culture, and history of the land upon which we live, told from multiple and diverse perspectives. And youth are asking for ethnic studies, and I'm here today because of youth. And it's because they know that curriculum that intentionally centers those who have been historically and systematically erased from mainstream curricula due to colonialism, racism, patriarchy, xenophobia, and linguistic imperialism, they know that when schools recognize and include the assets that students bring, students become more engaged in coursework, which will lead to increased reading and math scores for our state. Again, I strongly urge the committee to strengthen the ethnic studies language in this bill so all students in Minnesota have the benefit of the ethnic studies education. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Chang. On deck is Lisa Winkler, and up next is Josh Downham with the Minneapolis Public Schools. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Great. Thanks, Madam Chair. Josh Downham, Minneapolis Public Schools. I appreciate the opportunity to testify. And before I actually begin my remarks, I want to just say thank you to partisan and nonpartisan staff for the amazing work they've done this legislative session, keeping us in the loop, drafting bills, answering all our questions. They really have gone above and beyond. So I greatly appreciate all their efforts. Madam Chair, the board of the Minneapolis Public Schools' top legislative priority this session has been to create a more stable and predictable funding system. And this bill makes great strides to achieving that goal. Linking the English learner formula to general education and indexing the formula to inflation will benefit all schools across the state. This bill also helps districts plan for the future after those federal stimulus dollars have been expended. Without future predictable state funding, districts will face a fiscal cliff and won't be able to invest some of those federal resources in costs that are ongoing. This bill really helps on that. Another provision that will create more stable, predictable funding is Representative Joachim's provision to limit special education tuition billing. As recent data from MDE shows, charter school special education billing rates vary widely across the state. And members, remember, your local public schools are the ones who pay the bills, despite not receiving any revenue for the students served at those charter schools. Looking across the entire state, charter schools' average special education costs are $19,271, while district costs are $12,836. The way we pay for special education costs at charter schools is really fundamentally broken. When a charter school can spend 600% more than your local public school and bill 80% of that cost back to your local school, the system's broken. The outdated notion that costs should be borne by the district of residence, when we have such an extensive school choice system, has created costly mismatches between who decides the services and who pays. Ed Allies earlier today testified that all schools should be allowed to offer Cadillac education services. We agree. However, when resident districts are required to pay tuition billing costs that are 600% higher than their own costs, it comes at the expense of the services districts are allowed or able to provide their own special education students. Madam Chair, Chair Dabney, and committee members, it's time for us to address this, and I appreciate your time for testimony.
Thank you so much. On deck is Craig Sweet. Up next is Lisa Winkler, Vice President of External Relations with Serve Minnesota. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you. Madam Chair, Chair Dabney, and committee members, my name is Lisa Winkler, and I'm the Vice President of External Relations at Serve Minnesota, the state's Commission on National and Community Service. Thanks for the opportunity to testify briefly on HF 1065. Serve Minnesota greatly appreciates the funding in this bill for the Minnesota Math Corps. As many of you know, Minnesota Reading Corps and Minnesota Math Corps support students who struggle with reading and math by pairing them with trained AmeriCorps members who serve as tutors. These tutors are delivering results every day and helping students across the state make greater gains. But we also know that the pandemic has disrupted academic progress for even more of our state's learners. At a recent AMSD meeting, NWEA, the Northwest Evaluation Association, presented their initial findings on disrupted learning due to the pandemic. The impacts on mathematics were particularly stark. Nearly a third of students in grades 3 through 8 moved down a quartile in math. That is more than double the number of an average year. NWEA also acknowledged that their research may be understating the problem as fewer low-income students were in their sample. MathCorps provides high-quality, high-dosage tutoring to the students who need it most, and this bill will enable us to meet more of the demand from schools across the state for our AmeriCorps members. Thank you for investing in this proven program.
Thank you. On deck is Lee Schmidt. Up next is Craig Sweet, the site coordinator with the St. Paul Music Academy. Welcome. Please state your name and proceed.
Hello. Thank you, Chair Stan Steed and members of the committee. I'm Craig Sweet, full service community school coordinator at St. Paul Music Academy within the St. Paul Public School District, home of the Rocking Eagles. And I'm here today to speak in support of the full service community schools funding provision within this bill. And full service community schools exist across the entire state of Minnesota. And you've heard the session from my colleagues in Duluth, Deer River, Brooklyn Center, Rochester. And I speak on behalf of our whole full service community schools coalition. Full service community schools are about bringing community assets and resources directly on site within the school to support the needs of students, families, and the community. And you've heard today about wraparound services and the ongoing issues that have come from and have been laid bare by COVID. And full service community schools is a model and a strategy that address these, but it does take coordination. And that's what this bill does address and provides for that funding. I think we can agree that having resources on site within schools is great, but without integration, they're not as effective or fully adopted. The full service community school model does increase delivery and usage of services because resources aren't just dropped into the building without coordination. Coordinators like me help recruit resources and partners into our building, and we take burdens off of school principals, clerks, nurses, social workers for supporting our partners. We have resources that cover the full spectrum of needs, basic needs, housing, food support, healthcare, after-school options, tutoring, mentoring, homework help, and summer supports. And our model is about removing barriers to access because being on site makes it easier for families to get to these supports. They don't have to schlep off to a appointment at a dentist and maybe pull out all of their students from a school to attend that one appointment for a student. They can have that resource right on site at the school to help that family. And it's at a familiar location at school where students feel supported and where families feel that they are accepted. And so we try to create a hub for the community within this model.
Mr. Sweet, we are at time, so I need to stop your testimony. Thank you. Our final testifier today is Mr. Lee Schmidt, retired associate professor of science education with Hamline University. Welcome to the committee. State your name, please, and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee.
Thanks for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Lee Schmidt. I'm a former high school science teacher, former president of the Minnesota Science Teachers Association, member of the Earth Science Teacher Education Project, or ESTEP, planning team, and retired associate professor of science education at Hamline University. My primary role at Hamline was to provide professional development for teachers of science throughout Minnesota. So when the high school graduation requirements changed to require every student to take 1 year of either physics or chemistry, I was the person who sought state funding to design and deliver licensure programs for Minnesota science teachers to meet the statewide shortage of physics and science teachers. Over 70% of teachers attending these licensure programs were from greater Minnesota schools. And Hamline certified 92 new physics and 78 new chemistry teachers over 5 years, helping to correct the statewide teacher shortage. Now, with adoption of the new 2019 Minnesota Academic Standards in Science, all sixth grade teachers in Minnesota will be asked to teach earth science to their students using a new practice-based approach to instruction. Sixth grade teachers are being asked to teach science subject matter in which most have little or no background. In addition, high schools will need to develop and implement new earth science courses, and these high school teachers of science, especially in rural districts, will need accessible, affordable, graduate-level science courses to help procure 912 earth and space science teaching licenses. ESTEP, with funding from this bill, will address these urgent needs, serving up to 1,270 teachers of science statewide and enriching their science education for an estimated 60,000 Minnesota students. Minnesota science teachers, especially in greater Minnesota, are in need of targeted, affordable professional development in earth science. ESTEP, with state funding, solves this problem, and districts are willing to share the cost. The funding in this bill would support direct workshop expenses, while districts will fund teacher expenses such as per diem mileage and lodging. All Minnesota students deserve qualified teachers that are prepared to teach our new science standards while knowledgeable and confident in their subject. The importance of a rigorous and inclusive earth science education for all Minnesota students cannot be understated. Decisions regarding water, soil, air, minerals, and climate require an informed and knowledgeable citizenry with understanding of how the earth and science work. The effective teaching of earth science develops deductive reasoning and evidence-based decision-making, skills that are needed to shape a livable future for our citizens, community, our nation, and our planet. Please support our request for funding to continue the rich tradition of professional development for our teachers and quality science education for the next generation of Minnesota citizen scientists. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Schmidt. To all of our testifiers, thank you. Thank you so much for your time. And with that, members, we are adjourned.